Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Aquarian Radio at AquarianRadio.com. And today is an episode of Tantra Talk, and I'm your host, Janet Carolesson, with my co-host, Dr. Sasha Alec-Lesson. And our special guest today is Anita DeFrancesco, and we're going to talk about Tantra for everyone. And Anita is has an MA in Modern Sex and Relationship Coach and is founder of Tantra Wisdom, and she's been leading workshops for 20 years in Los Angeles and Philadelphia. She's a somatic psychotherapist, Tantra Yoga Master, and author of Live Free, and her podcast is Mindfulness, Sexuality, and Relationships, and she currently resides in Philadelphia. And I have a page for Anita on AquarianRadio.com. Let me pull on Dr. Sasha, and then I'll pull on Anita. Sweetheart, hi.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Hi. Well, I'm really looking forward to this.
Anita, oh, you're really low. Can you talk into the phone a little bit better?
Oh, is any better?
A little bit, yes.
Okay. Anita's got an incredible Tantra Wisdom page on Facebook, and what I get and in your approach is that you're really talking about what it takes to have successful relationships, full-on, all-the-way relationships, and that's what I like to hear from you today on this show.
Excellent. Hi, Anita. Oops, one second. Got to put the button on. One second. Hi, Anita.
Hi,
welcome to Aquarian Radio and Tantra Talk.
Hi, Janet and Sasha. It's really, really nice to talk to you both. I haven't seen you in years or even talked to you in years, but it's really nice to connect with you here today.
Yeah, we're really happy to be on a radio show together. So it's been years since we've last seen you. I'd like to begin by you talking to our listeners and tell them about yourself and about your work. If you could mute when you're not talking, it might help with that feedback. We're getting some feedback. But go ahead and,
so
and tell us about yourself and your work.
What shall I mute? Do you want me to mute something here or no?
On your phone, if you can mute quickly. If not, don't worry about it. We'll just work around the feedback. I'm not sure why we're getting feedback, though.
But I have earphones on. Should I take the earphones off?
No, I think that's okay. While you're talking, I'm going to quickly close the door. Sasha, close the door between the two rooms. That might help with the feedback. Okay, so go ahead, Anita.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes, okay. Okay, I am Anita DeFrancesco, and I'm the founder of Tantra Wisdom. And I came into Tantra many years ago. I was born and raised in Philadelphia, and the word Tantra came to me when I was just 20 years old through a Swami Virato, who was the founder of the New Frontier magazine in Philadelphia back in the 80s. And I stumbled over that magazine and stumbled on the word Tantra, and he was one of my first people who enlightened me about what Tantra was. And so at that time, I started to look up the word and started to attend different spiritual workshops that were happening at the time in Philadelphia, and it wasn't something I understood. I didn't know that it was a yoga at the time, and I hadn't really explored that much yoga at that point in my life. I was just 20, and I hadn't even moved to LA yet. So once I got to Los Angeles is really where things surfaced for me, because that's the Mecca of a lot of the different spiritual trainings and things that I've received over the years. But when I discovered the word Tantra, I just felt so connected to it. And it was something that I knew that I had to go on a path. But initially, that wasn't the path. Yeah, and initially, when I started to study, well, it wasn't really that I studied in Philadelphia, because there wasn't anything then and at that time. And I really wasn't in any loops of circles of people. I was very young. But what I did was I embarked and moved to Los Angeles when I was able to get away from my parents. And I started to study everything from breathing to movement to psychology. And all of these things were the makings of what Tantra really is about. It's really a small word for a big thing called love, and how we approach love, and how we understand the success that our lives can have if we have proper balanced love. And this is really what I was after, love. And this is how my journey started. So I studied different things and then came into Tantra. And then at one point I made up the word Tantra wisdom, because I just thought that, well, this is a wisdom to me. It's not sex. It's not dirty. It's not kinky. It's a lot of different things, but it's wisdom. And wisdom is very important as far as love, as far as anything goes, as far as relationships go. And I thought that, and that's when my whole thing started to open up for me in this world of Tantra. But I also was really a sick child when I was 9. I had rheumatic heart disease. And possibly the reason I got into this field of healing is because my body hurt so much from swollen joints and having rheumatic fever and infections around the heart. I seeked out things that were for the body. And I really found everything I wanted, you know. I mean, the moment I stepped my foot in Los Angeles, it just all came to me. So I thought that the heart was a very special organ, a very special chakra that kind of was not working or healed. And that was one of the chakras that I focused on in my past to heal my heart so that the love could surface again for me in my sickness and my family life.
What do you think? What did you have to do to heal your heart?
Well,
what were some of the things you did?
Well, some of the things, I was in a hospital bed for 6 months. And I say that I didn't know the word Tantra at 9 years old, but I say that's when it really began. My parents were very much in love, but they didn't know how to show it to each other. And there was so much friction in the household. I never wanted to be there. And I think that psychologically or subconsciously, I made myself get sick, and I went away for a year. And I was in this hospital, and what I had to do in the bed, most of the time I did a lot of movement in the bed. Joseph Pilates, the man who invented Pilates, the exercise, he had the same disease.
Yes.
And Pilates. And he invented Pilates in the bed while he was sick. Because with rheumatic fever, you're confined to a bed because of the fevers and the swollen joints. So you're really not allowed to get out of bed. But, yeah, so what I did was I did undulation and movement. I just played around with that kind of stuff, and actually I thought that the undulation in my pelvis went up to my heart and it healed me. It was the sexual
probably
energy.
Did.
And it was amazing because children were dying around me, and just like that, like one day you know them, and the next day they're being brought out in a body bag. And this is 1966 in Philadelphia, when rheumatic fever was really a big disease then. But it was the heart, and to me it was my heart was in shock. because the love in my household wasn't really healthy. It wasn't healthy love. There was love, but it wasn't healthy.
Did they yell at each other? Were they a drinker?
No. My parents, they were so in love that thin line of love and hate that they hated each other because they were so in love. And I thought if they knew, they were twin flames. But I thought if they knew Tantra, they would have been able to understand how to cherish and honor the space, you know, the honoring the sacred space and navigate around that center and their chakras. But they didn't have that kind of, you know, theory or education. But they were so in love that they hated each other so much that they couldn't stay together after 20 years. And it was very hard because when you grow up with people that they're each other's only love. They were each other's only love. And it was very hard for them because they just didn't understand how to communicate, for example. The communication was so poor, a lot of arguing, of course. Defensiveness, denial, you know, those kind of behaviors. Which people are always nitpicking. And couples, you know, they do that. They nitpick. They pick arguments and they bicker at each other. And for no reason, for things that can really make your love suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And so their love suffers. But I thought for some reason that I thought in my own self that I picked up on this. I was an empath. And I realized that my heart was in shock from this actually, and I relate that whole experience to that. And then when I went to become a patient in this hospital, I became sort of transformed. It was an awakening because they would soak me in ice every night, and I was just like a shaman at that age, to be honest. I mean, it was, and that was why that was the awakening that got me on this path. That was the awakening.
Wow.
Oh. Yeah.
Now, were you the only child? Were there other children in your family?
Yes, two brothers and a sister.
Where are you in the birth order?
Second.
Okay, so you got out of there for about a year. Or did you say a year that you were away from that family?
Confined to a hospital. Because rheumatic fever, that's what they did then. They confined you in a home. They schooled you and everything. And that's what they did. They schooled me. And at that time, too, it was a real trying time in Philadelphia because at that time I was the only white child amongst African Americans. And it was very culture shocking in 1966. So it was another challenge for me to have to open up my heart to people that weren't being loved in the world at that time. So it was very, very challenging. Yes, because, you know, when you're in 1966, and especially Philadelphia, one of the most highly racial cities in the world, in the whole U.S., Philadelphia is the culprit here, more so than New York. And when when I went into that hospital, and it was a shock for me, but I didn't care. I was so sick. I was dying. And all I wanted was love. So I turned to my hospital mates and I made them my best friends so that I could exercise my heart muscle and love people. And I really believe that if you don't exercise your heart muscle and show love and compassion, that muscle there can really get sore. And numb.
Isn't that amazing how you set that up on a higher soul level and it's all perfect for your evolution? It's amazing.
It is, and it just because when I went in there and my parents couldn't visit me often because it was further away, this hospital, and I didn't have anyone, and the kids would like pick on me because I was white and they were black. And that's what society was doing to them. So it was a very trying time for me and fear, a lot of fear. But then I thought, I need friends. I want to love people. And I really engaged them. It was just like something that I did that was like a miracle in a way that I really opened my heart to my own feelings, so that I could love anybody around me so that I would heal, because the love in my household was so, was bad. It was not balanced. It was a lot of arguing, a lot of defense, a lot of fighting. And this is where I found my love amongst kids, believe it or not. They helped me heal my heart.
What was the dynamics between you and your siblings?
Well, my older brother, he, because of this house, this trying life we had, he ended up becoming a schizophrenic. So he's like, he totally tuned out. You know, everybody has their own way of dealing with pain, I guess. And my younger sister and younger brother were just too much, a little bit younger than us. So we sort of, everybody sort of in their own little bubble, so to speak. When I came home, I was different, and they couldn't really relate to me. I was like very different. I didn't have, even the kids at school, they looked at me like, who is she? You know, she wasn't with us for a whole year, like a new kid on the block. And it was challenging for me growing up, because I felt very, it isolated me in one sense, but it also made me go into my higher power even stronger. And from that hospital awakening, I was already in the higher power. And that's the transformation that happened, that when I went to the school, I was like not ordinary. And that was very difficult growing up that way. And my siblings couldn't really accept me, not that they didn't love me or anything. It's just that they were like, they would tease me. Oh, she's different. Oh, she's odd. You know, that kind of thing. I guess if you want to say black sheep, but I don't look at black sheep of the family. I was transformed, and it was something new to them. It was not anything. And then when I got to LA, gosh, everyone's transformed, and I was right in my bubble, you know. So it's like, you know, there's the transformed people, you know, and there weren't any in my grade school at 9 years old. Well, what do you expect? They still see me as like different, you know, and, but I, you know, it just turned out to be a lot of wisdom that I, endured at that time, because I wanted to live, and that was the main thing, life. And if you're sick and dying and you're watching, at least 6 body bags went out while I was in there.
Wow.
And you think you're going to die. And what do? I opened my heart to my feelings, and I reached out to my hospital mates. And I engaged them into love, and we became really best friends after that. It was like when we got out of the hospital, we were all hanging out, you know?
Wonderful, so wonderful. That's amazing. Sasha just got back on. Let me just check his mic, honey. Can you talk?
Yes, is my phone working?
Hello? Yes, it is. Hi, can you hear us?
Yes, I
can hear you. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we can. Yeah.
That's the story, Anita. Thank you so much for sharing that. What a beautiful story.
Yeah, it really was. It's really my whole life, that little story there. And even on the day I left the hospital, one of the girls' arms, it was like I went to say goodbye to some people that were still staying longer than myself. And the one girl, I went to hug her, and she just died. It was like life was really much of a celebration for me then. I just looked at life as a gift and celebration. And that's Tantra to me. Tantra's like,
hugged her and she died?
Yes. The very last day when my father came to pick me up when I was going home, I went to say goodbye to some of the hospital mates. The patients were rheumatic fever and asthma, real bad asthma then. And a lot of them had moved to their doctors had them move to Arizona back then. But now it's different. Today they don't do that. But the one girl, I remember, Julia, her name was, I went into her room to say goodbye to her and hug her, and her mom and dad were there. She was having an asthmatic attack, and she just died in my arms.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so my childhood was very, I was very much an adult at 9. I mean, really a wise adult. I had a lot of wisdom from all of this. That's probably why I came up with the word Tantra wisdom, you know, those words.
Yes.
It just came to me, you know, one day in L.A. and I said, oh, I'm going to trademark this, you know. And but that girl who died in my arms, when I walked out of there, I looked back and I said, life is a gift and life is a celebration. And to me, Tantra is a big celebration of love. You know, it's about celebrating the love and the opening your feelings, your heart. And your everything about yourself. So this is how I relate it to Tantra.
in a way, this other child is still with you. She's there. You evoked your spirit somehow, and she's become a companion of yours. That's what it feels like to me.
Yes. Well, I learned to build a very strong relationship with myself because I didn't have anyone. I was alone. So the relationship that I built to myself was, you know, which I do the inner child work on people now, is it's your best friend and your only friend and the only person that you are is you and your inner child. And this relationship is so strong that no one can break it. And even though that I was a loner growing up and isolated, because the kids couldn't accept me when I came back, I had this sort of transformation about me that they just couldn't understand. I just never really went into any type of victimization from that. I just looked to my relationship to myself, and that was like all I needed. That was all I needed.
Wow.
And laying in the bed when you don't have anyone and you're in a hospital where no one's talking to you because of racial conflict and your parents can't come to visit, what do you do? And kids are dying every day. You just, as a child, you become very creative and you learn how to save yourself. You learn
Amazing.
How to save yourself. And for me,
wow.
It's... it was my life and my path has chosen me. I don't know what path I would have chosen had I not had this experience, but my path has chosen me.
That's what it seems.
Yeah.
Wow. So then
yeah.
You were pretty young when that happened. You were like 8 or something. And then
yes,
nine, and you stayed in Philadelphia until you graduated high school or something, and then you went to California. What happened?
Well, after high school, I went to X-ray technology school. My grandmother was a nurse, so I didn't know what I really wanted to do, but I was studying massage at that time. How amazing. There was no massage in Philadelphia, but because I had those swollen joints all my life with rheumatic fever, I always needed to go to some kind of somatic therapies, which weren't really that big in the 70s in Philly. So I found a massage therapist in a chiropractor's office. And I went to school for massage at the time, and I went to school for X-ray technology because it was a job. It was a stepping stone type of job that you can work 9 to 5 and get a health benefits and whatnot. And after that, I got my bachelor's in psychology right from that, from the X-ray training, because the hospital, when you worked in a hospital at that time, they gave you so much benefits to go to college. And then from there, I moved to California when I was just about maybe close to 30, almost 30, 28-ish, 30, right around there. And I got my master's in psychology out there and all my trainings. But before I went there, I did do some trainings with people here. There were a lot of New Age communities just surfacing. Rebirthing, Sandra, what was her name? Sandra Bay was one of the first people I did rebirthing with in Philadelphia. And Tony Lamastro has a center here, but there was very small, far and in between these kind of new age, you know, communities in Philly. And you really had to like tap into them. They just didn't appear to you like they do in LA. So I sort of found all the new age communities that were just starting to surface back then when I was in my 20s. And I said, oh, yeah, I like this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to go to L.A. and get my master's in psych now. And I did. I carved out the whole path, and I did it exactly the way I carved it out.
Wow.
I picked
that's
myself
amazing.
Up. Yeah. The X-ray technology training, it was wonderful to do that because I learned about the body. I learned anatomy. I learned about medicine, how bad medicine is. Oh, I really saw a picture there. Sorry,
you got that.
So sorry, any medical doctors listening, but they wanted to do heart surgery on me when I was 9, and my mother refused. And now I see all these people when I was an X-ray tech. And I did mammography. Okay, so mammography got me involved in about the woman and the healing and the hormones. So I became. I went out to Texas and they trained me in ultrasound and all kinds of studies to do during with the X-ray work on the breast. And that's when I got more into you know, more into carving the path for women and health and hormones and sexuality. You know, your breasts, and all these women would come in at that time. Oh, anxiety. Everybody thought they had breast cancer. It was like the newest thing. It was the first machine on the market, you know, the first mammography machine.
Wow.
I was doing it. The first mammography machines on the market. I was doing that in 1976 or something. And and I saw how anxiety-ridden these women were. And then I saw what these doctors did when I was doing x-rays on general people and all this medicine. And this just totally made me go to a holistic path of medicine, because after my sickness, I guess this is what I needed to get into to realize how to be a healthy person the rest of my life. Because once you have heart stuff, you never know what path your health is going to take you, what direction. And so the women, I started to get involved with them and the mammographies and really, you know, talking about their sexuality and how, you know, how important it was to not be so, you know, they were so, oh, the doctors will put so much fear in them just because this new thing was on the market. Anyway, that was that. And then I moved on from that. I ended up before I went to LA too, I went to Temple University. I studied broadcast journalism because I was getting involved in, I took like about maybe a year's worth of college stuff of that. And I became an award-winning medical journalist on infertility. Amazingly, like infertility was just a story. I became an award. Yeah. It was like, because I had endometriosis and I was researching, you know, what can I do for endometriosis? And that's like infertile. You're infertile with that. Well, a lot of women are, but some aren't. And then I won this nationwide award on infertility and leukemia. And I did two stories in Temple University, the broadcast journalism department, one of the best Annenberg School of Broadcast Journalism in the country. And I had a chance to work on the radio station there, being a DJ. And then I went to one or two other radio stations. And then when I got to L.A., I started my own talk show on cable access. And because L.A. was so much more accepting with those cable access shows than Philadelphia was. And, you know, they're very, very big in L.A. Everything's big there. And so I just put all this together, just what I needed to do and study and carving out my path. I got a little bit of everything. So I'm like a PR person, you know. I can do great public affairs, public relations, along with studying all of these different things. Because I think sexuality, and you need to know about a lot of different things. Because sexuality is the entire bubble or the entire bowl of life, and it's not just one subject, it's many subjects.
Right.
The sexuality is many subjects.
Sexuality.
It's not just hormones in a man, a lingam and a yoni, and I mean it's like a bigger picture. To me it is anyway.
Uh-huh. So Sasha, do you have any questions or feedback, and then we'll go into that.
Well, I love your way of relating your journey and sort of putting it out there in a way for everybody. I'm sort of the same way, eclectic. I just followed whatever was interesting to me, and I cannot help but synergize my information and experience. And so the mixture you've got, and it's full of vitality. And I understand that you apply that to now relating to individuals, relating to all of existence. You're really talking about how to be in the world.
Yes, yes. How to be in the world, yes.
So following the title then, Tantra Wisdom, what are the biggest wisdoms you have to share?
As far as Tantra or anything?
Well, both.
Well, just everything you've learned about sexuality and relationship. You were starting to break it down into the elements, so we'll go back to that. I just wanted to give Sasha a chance to ask questions or interject anything. So what are the elements
One big wisdom is acceptance and surrender. And one thing that I find that people really don't do so well is accept themselves and accept their situations and whatever it is that is going on in their life. Acceptance is very challenging for people to undertake that.
Like say somebody's got that, you know, the breast cancer that was the fear-based thing that you were working with. How do you get them to accept that?
Well, the thing is, you know, there's a surrender. You know, you surrender to your own feelings and your heart. And once you start to surrender and realize that, you know, this is still your life. You're in the moment, regardless. It doesn't mean you're dead or anything if it's breast cancer. But to just come to that moment, and the moment is the transformation. That's where you get unstuck, in the moment. Because sometimes people live in the past and they live in the future. The future is always going to be death because we're all going to die. But the past is going to bring your pain in. So if you really, you know, harness the moment and embody that moment, this surrendering comes and you can unfold and you can experience joy and desire. And this is wisdom when you can do that, but it takes a lot of courage from the heart and the mind to get to that, you know, and I don't know if it takes a lot of work on someone's part. Sometimes having an illness like cancer can actually bring you into that awakening, that transformation. Because that right there is something. You ever hear people, they're sick and then they don't die and they had an awakening from it? Well, I think that once you get into, so this acceptance and surrender, but unstuck in the moment, that's a big wisdom for me. Learning how to transform pain. Your pain is a source of information. And to learn from the pain that it's not really pain. It's not really sickness. It's really just your love wanting to unfold even more. And when we don't have the love,
your illness seemed to be a cry for love, and the cry for love, you weren't getting it where you where it was supposed to come from, like your parents. So you got it. You learned how to pull in love from wherever you were, what was real, instead of what you were imagining it should look like.
Right. So the love wasn't, in other words, what I did was took my pain in the moment and I used it as a source of information that my pain was only the stuck part of me that wanted love. And that was the armor in my body, the armor. So in my muscles, in my mind, in my thinking patterns, that was like not having love, not having the feminine energy in general, just feminine in anyone. So learning how to really harness love and the love for yourself. And once you surrender and you're in this moment, there is no sickness. There is no future. There is no past. It's right now. And it's hard to stay in that moment. You know, it really takes practice. But sometimes, like I said, a disease can do that to someone. It can shift them.
Yes. So you have a student and they're having difficulty accepting what's going on in their lives. And say I was your student and I've come to you and it's like, oh, I've got all this whatever's going on. You know, what's your first step? How do you reach them? How do you approach them?
Well, I mean, first of all, I do different works with them, breathing and all kinds of things. But before that, because, you know, we all have an approach that we use. We try our tools on these people, on our clients, but not always are they going to work. What I do with people is I just let them say, you know, go on and say whatever it is that they need to say. And I just look at them and I sit there and I stare at them and look at each other. They may not be looking at me directly, but I'm holding a space for them. And giving them this wisdom of space where they can really know that it's okay. It's okay. I make people feel very safe just in my presence. And that's my first step with them, just to sit with them. And, you know, a lot of people have a lot of anxiety in the beginning when they're having difficulty with whatever it is. And really, it's just their mind racing away. They're not, it's patterns. It's really nothing. It's just their ego. And so I work with just holding space and being present with them. And then I go into my different therapies that I've trained in to help them, you know, move along. So holding space and presence would be the key in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And some people really, I had this one woman that came to me in LA. She had a lot of difficulty in her life going on, and it was just 1 hour I was with her, and she thought, I didn't really do anything. All I did was, like, listen to her talk, and then she thought that I was a gem. I did all this wonderful stuff for her, and she couldn't believe she met me. It was like, so it's a certain presence. And even a man, I had a man come to me once who was on chemicals. He used heroin. And he desperately wanted to get off heroin. He wasn't like some street drug addict. Not that you have to be. I mean, he had a really good job, and I said a few things to him. All I said was that, you know, life is really precious. And it was like that one line that I said to him that made him get off. And he came to me several times after, and he gave me a great testimony. And even years later, he had called me and said, I'm never on drugs again, just from that one line that you said. So sometimes, you know, maybe my experience as a child gave me this certain kind of image, this certain kind of, you know, power, if you will. I don't want to use that word power, but, I mean, for lack of a better word, you know, some kind of innateness that reaches their soul.
Wow.
And that's what it is. I can heal people. I can heal people by just being and saying a line to them and just being in their presence, because that's what my life was about when I was 9. I mean, I had to really do it alone. And see, this is the thing with people too that are having challenges. They just don't know how to be by themselves. They don't know how to accept themselves. They don't know how to do life alone. Even though you're doing it with people, you're still doing it alone.
Yeah, it feels so. Well,
like
people who need people.
Right, that song. But, you know, my friends, like, if I'll get on a plane and go somewhere, they'll go, you're going alone? I go, no, when I get there, there's going to be a ton of people in that country where I'm going. You know, so it's like, it's going to be a big social network when I get there. You know, it's just
that's
more
great.
That, yeah, it's more, when I was growing up real young, I would just take trips alone, and, you know, the kids in high school, you're going to go by yourself? I know, well, when I get there, there'll be people. So
that's
it was
great.
Even when I moved to LA, I moved alone. I go, well, I'm sure there'll be people when I get there. So, I mean, that's just
great.
The way I look at life, you know, and I really simplify things that way, because it's like life is so heavy. Life was so heavy growing up, and it's still heavy today with all these different things and the race we're in, you know, the revolution and everything and all these, you know, internet stuff. But I want to keep it simple. I want to just keep it simple. I want to keep the water flowing down my back. Just keep rolling down my back.
That's great. Sasha, your turn. Say something.
Something. What? I like, you know, one of my teachers is Carl Rogers, and he said, if you just listen to people every once in a while, say what you hear them saying, and you share your feelings now and then, they'll just figure it out themselves and just keep reflecting it back. And with all these studies, people have been using the Gestalt method of role play, this and that. And so when you looked at all these things and subtracted all the different methodologies, what you're left with is attention and caring about what you say as you sort it out. It's beautiful. However we talk about it, that's part of the process.
Right. Well, it is. It's sort of like, you know, categorizing your thinking. you know, I do that. I'll categorize everything in the way I think, and everything has a category. And then it's like I'll bounce or shift in and out of each category and grab something from this. It's like tricking your brain in a way to sort of not let your ego take it over and not let those patterns and those voices creep up. And those are the things that bury the love. I found over the years, of course, I've done a lot of work on myself to heal those patterns and the things that buried my love, you know, from myself and others and from judging. So once you have more love, you don't judge as much because, you know, what's the sense? I mean, you just got love. You only judge when you don't have love. Just hate. When you judge, it's hate, you know? So really, it gets
right.
back to your senses. It goes back to the senses. And to me, Tantra is like just a big, it's just a big, you know, small word for a whole lot of love. And, but yeah, it's just, you know, working with your own, you know, your own foundation and just the root. It's really all in the root of the root chakra and moving up from all these different chakras that kind of guide you, that can guide you into different parts of yourself and attract mm-hmm. you as well, kind of radiate you to different, you know, wherever it is that you're supposed to be.
So one of the things that happens in Tantra, and I had this happen to me earlier in the day, you know, there was a Tantra article on the Facebook, and they immediately jumped to sex. Can you explain to our listeners what Tantra is and how it's not just sex, but sex is part of it?
Well, as we know that Tantra is a yoga, right? It was Vatayana was the man who invented it or brought it out in India way back in the day. And he wanted to enlighten people about the senses. So he was teaching people in his classrooms about, you know, opening the senses and flirtation and how to keep yourself fluid and open to love. And really, of course, you know, then one thing leads to another. But to me, Tantra is not sex at all. It's really, like I said, it's a wisdom of deep, deep philosophy. And the philosophy is so deep that it has to tap into your sexual energy. But the sexual energy, of course, is the energy of the whole body. So if you separate these energies, then you're only going to think of Tantra as sex. But if you put these energies together, if you superimpose them and put them together, then you're not going to think of Tantra as sex. You're going to think of it as the whole being of who you are. So Tantra, once you learn how to use the tools of Tantra that can help you to become a better person and learn to communicate better, of course, naturally, you're going to seek out better relationships or attract better relationships, more healthy, balanced relationships. And then, of course, naturally, you will have better sex. You will have better lovemaking. You will be more present for your lover because it really begins outside the bedroom. So a lot of people that have challenges in the bedroom haven't really learned how to communicate outside the bedroom, and they haven't really learned how to respect each other. And all of these tools are what we teach in Tantra, and how to touch with meaning and compassion and give your partner that attention, intention, instead of just, you know, taking each other for granted. So Tantra is not sex at all. It's just tools that help you in your regular everyday journey of life to become a better person. And then, of course, naturally, you're always looking to have the best relationship that you can and the best sex. So you have to work on yourself before you can get there.
Were you ever able to come full circle and work with your parents or your siblings to better your communication with them and with each other?
Well, about my my parents divorced, and my mother, I could open to her in communication because she was an artist and she had and that open creative side to her. And with her, I could. But my father was very complete opposite. He was very, you know, very. He didn't have much emotion going, so he was kind of cold. And I guess in that time, the men didn't really, or at least my father didn't learn how to express himself. And my siblings, the best sibling I have is my schizophrenic brother because he is so intelligent and so creative and so has so much expression and love. The other ones, they're normal, and the schizophrenic is the one that I feel like is really evolved, you know, more so than the others, and much more creative and much more of a Mensa brain, you know. And but my other two, forget it. The other two are just totally in denial about everything, and they're not open. Their heart chakras aren't open, and no, I cannot communicate with them well. I mean, I do, but I try to teach them. But it's not like, you know, I have to understand. It's hard when you're a really evolved, transformed person to, especially in the East Coast here, like Philly, we'll say. You know, after living in L.A. 20 years, it's just difficult to kind of that consciousness, you know, your consciousness is higher, and it's difficult. It's hard for people to understand that. Unlike L.A., everybody is sort of like it's all over the place, you know, and that's okay because you have to bring consciousness up if it's not there, you know. You got to teach people. Well, I'm a teacher, you know, and I have to be teaching. That's my role in life, you know, I guess, to teach.
Yeah.
And then I go,
are your parents still parents still on this side, or have they crossed over?
No, they've both crossed over. Yeah. Yep, both crossed over. Since I've been back here, that's why I came back, because they both were very sick, so. Yeah, so that's they're over, and and my younger brother had passed. He just kind of was. Now here's a love story for you. He lived with a girl and helped raise her children. He didn't have any of his own, and he was only 54. And he would call me up all the time and say, "I'm not sure if she loves me." But I got through to him as far as tantrically, believe it or not. And I would coach him how to love her and what to do. And he goes, "I don't know if she loves me. She said this, she did that. She wrote me a letter." And he actually started opening to me. Like, he was the younger one. And he, I was teaching him different paths, but his heart, I'm going to say that he just fell off a chair and died from high blood pressure a couple of years ago. And, you know, I think it was because he couldn't get the love he really wanted from this girl that he was with all these years, for like 15 years. It just, you know, it just wasn't, she didn't know how to really love him or honor him, or it just was a confusing relationship for them. It was an up and down thing, but he started to ask me all kinds of questions sexually, and I started to teach him, you know, what to do, how to do, and tantrically, and this, that. So I did get through to him at the end, and then he left the planet. So,
at least she got through to him.
Yeah, well, he had come to California a few times, and so he wanted his ashes in the Joshua tree. So that's where I took them, to Joshua tree, you know, out in the desert. Because he said he wanted to be there. That's where he wanted to go after he left Philly. He was going to move up there, but he never got to go. So I took the ashes up there, yeah. So,
That's nice that you got to do that for him.
Yeah, because this way he got to be where he wanted to be, but he kept saying, "I got to come, I got to get back there, I want to move there, I got to get back there." But he never got back there, and then he died, you know? So all of these things, again, living in that moment and always waiting for the future or the past kind of
gets in your way, and the future kind of, oh, I can't do this because I have to have save or do this for the future. But really, it's just that moment. I don't mean to be spontaneous in life, because spontaneity is good, but that's not really the moment. Sometimes spontaneity could be good or bad. It could get you in trouble, or it could work for you. But you have to have that foundation and understand your own intuition, your own perception. And if you're strong in that foundation, your spontaneity and your moments will just be right on target. And so it's trusting yourself, really. It's trusting.
Right.
And that's what love is. Yeah. It's just trusting the universe, you know. And
well, that's a big one for people, to trust the universe, to believe that on some level your higher self, your subconscious or superconscious, knows exactly what you need. And yet the ego one that's down in life and, you know, doesn't see the whole picture, tends to get freaked out and lack consciousness and fear and all kinds of stuff.
So they're in the lower chakra, and that kind of
in the lower chakra.
Yeah, they haven't like surfaced with that, and they need work in that area to help, you know, to help them to evolve a little bit, to kind of come to or make a shift. You know, sometimes if something happens in their life, any experience can really also help them, and it could be a good thing, even if it was a bad thing. Like my heart hospital experience.
Right.
It was a bad thing for the heart, but it was a good thing. So, you know,
right.
It's like, you just take the good with the bad no matter what. Like this movie, I, Tonya, I just saw. It's out now. Remember the skater, I, Tonya? Tonya.
Okay.
It's really an empowering. The mother and the girl who plays Tonya are both up for awards. They've already received awards. The acting is wonderful. But, you know, it's an empowering movie to learn about the good, take the good with the bad. Because the mother was so abusive to Tonya, beat her up, you know, alcoholic kind of thing. And this girl, you know, made her way to skate. And the mother put her on the skates. And the mother is the one who gave her the gift to be the skater. And, but yet at the same time, the mother whacked her around, beat her up, you know, threw her out. So it's kind of like, you know, and she complained to the mother, but you know, when you look at it, the mother gave you the gift. The mother can't give you everything. Your parents, your mother and father cannot give you everything. If they give you one thing, accept it and be happy and don't complain that they abused you, because whatever it is that they gave you is what you're going to learn from, whether it was something good or something bad. And
wow,
whatever, you know, her mother, her mother gave her the skating, but her mother abused her. So if you see the movie, you're going to be, oh my God, what a mother. How could she live with her? She whacked her around. But mother is the one who put her on the skates and paid for her lessons to become an Olympic star. I mean, so you're never going to get the girl, Nancy Kerrigan, the other skater. Now, she had the smooth life, the happy parents, the Olympics, you know. So, you know, you're not always going to be, and this is what I always try to teach people, is that, you know, look at all the good things, weigh it out. Everybody has something good, even if you didn't like your parents, even if you didn't like your husband or wife. There's something, you know, weigh it out. What are the good things? Because you're not, it's really hard to get all or nothing, you know, in life. And I mean, I always say that, good with bad. You know, my life, I feel, was that whole experience was bad, but it was good. You know, my whole experience living, and maybe that, you know, that my parents whacked each other around so much that was a good thing for me to go get transformed, you know?
Right.
So that's,
yeah.
That's the gift my mother gave me. That's it. That's what she gave me. And I mean, I learned from it. And that's, people say to celebrate your life after they die. Well, that's what my mother gave me. But most people, they want to, not most, but some, they want to go into the victim mind and be a victim. And they just don't understand life. And it's really, it's not, it's, you know, you never know what you're going to get, as far as Gump says. You know, so
right.
That's it. I mean, it's true. I mean, I watch, you know, all these movies because I'm in the Screen Actors Guild, and I have to, they send us a lot of movies all the time, and I'm always like finding the meaning in the movie. Well, I do some acting as well. You know, I'm also an actress part time, I do. I was in a movie 2 years ago called Voiceless. It was about. It was the perfect movie for me to be in because it was about the abortion movement. It was filmed here. Yeah, it was filmed here in Philadelphia, New York. And for some reason, you know, my mother, she tried to abort me when I was a baby, when I was in her womb, actually, because she thought I wasn't my father's kid. And my father said, abort it. So it was like crazy. Yeah. that part of my story I didn't tell you. But so when the movie, when this movie asked me to be in it, and it was about abortion, and they gave me a couple of different scenarios about. I played a mother in a with a little boy in a soup kitchen. They gave me five lines, which is great for a movie. And but I said, oh my God, I can relate to this. My mother almost wanted to abort me, and she couldn't do it because it was too late. You know, I guess you can do it in the first few months. And back in the 50s, I was born in the 50s. It wasn't legal then, so you sort of had to do it in the alley. And she had complications with getting that together. So here I am, right?
Right. But, there you are.
But the thing was, when this particular movie 2 years ago, and I said, oh, my God, I need to be in this movie. It's about abortion. And they were showing you how women went to pro-abortion, pro and cons about abortion, and how they go to the clinic, and the clinic didn't care, and this guy becomes a missionary to try to help these girls. And this is what the movie was about. So it really related to me personally. And and I was glad to be a part of it. And I gave the director my book. I said, you know, I have a section in here about it. About abortion, about my mother aborting me. You might want to read it. It'll help you with the movie, you know. And that whole thing, you know, is, again, that's the gift my mother, even though my mother didn't, you know, I always was growing up and I never felt she gave me the proper life. You know, there was a lot of abusive projection and I never got what I wanted. My mother gave me life because she didn't abort me. Yes. And that was the gift. That was the gift I got. Like when you see Tanya, the mother whacked her around. The mother was a stoned alcoholic. And yet the mother put her on the skates and paid for her lessons. You understand?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, this is what people don't get. And that's why, if you really tap into your higher powers, and tantra is one way to get there, you can really have fantastic love with someone. Just love, you know, not necessarily sex. Sex is a whole other thing. But just have that fantastic love of yourself and of someone else or other people. Because this is the wisdom is acceptance.
Well, we're running out of time, so that went fast. Go ahead, Sasha. You have something to say? We have a little bit of time.
A step further than just, well, whatever you're challenged by, give you direction. You could say more than that, that you orchestrated, imagine, as we do in existential philosophy, that created whatever you're confronted with for your own growth and expansion of your consciousness. The power over the entire thing. You chose your parents, not just you reacted to them as best you could. You set it up. And if you, somehow just thinking that, giving that little mental thing, gives it even more power for you to construct what you do wish.
So existentially, we actually choose our parents. You're saying,
right.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I do. I agree there. I definitely agree with that. But what were you going to say, Janet?
I was going to say, Anita, what your website and how people can reach you to schedule a session or something, or just talk to you and your book real quick here.
Yeah, tantrawisdom.com, and everything is there. My book is Live Free. They can, you know, email me and get a book if they want. Live Free, Your Journey to a Liberated Life. That's how I have it on Amazon. Live Free, Your Journey to a Liberated Life. But if they want a book, they can contact me. But anyway, the classes I'm doing right now are specifically in just Philadelphia right now. And I do Skype sessions and private sessions.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Fascinating story. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Facebook, my group, Tantra Wisdom, and my business page, Tantra Wisdom. I have a really good Facebook group page with 11,000 members. So they want to peruse that group, they can, or join, they can get a lot of information about Tantra teachers around the planet.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so nice to connect with you both in Hawaii.
Nice to connect with you, too. We're running out of time. It's going to stop recording any second now. So thank you so much.
Okay.
Love and blessings.
Thank you.
And aloha.
Okay. Good night.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.